You may know my first guest, Rhiannon Giddens, as the voice of the string band The Carolina Chocolate Drops. The group first rose to fame with the hit Country Girl.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows. Running with your cousins from yard to yard. The living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl. I've been around the world.
Rhiannon's second solo album, Freedom Highway, came out in February, and she performs Saturday night at the Variety Playhouse. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's the first time I've ever heard Country Girl described as a hit, so that felt nice.
Well, you know, folk music is not a genre, at least in the United States, that's traditionally associated with African Americans. Most people who sing folk music or sing with a string band have been white in the past. Do you think there are still obstacles for people of color in this genre?
Well, I think that's, it depends on what you're considering folk music. If you're considering it the commercial, you know, resurgence of acoustic music that happened in the 60s, say with like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan, yeah, it was overwhelmingly white, even though there were black folk musicians in that commercial world, you know, like Odetta and Joan Eddy, and of course so many people were influenced by Lead Belly. So, you know, when you talk about folk music as an American genre, as an American thing, it's been heavily influenced and populated by African Americans, but the common idea of it is absolutely more of a white sort of singer-songwriter kind of thing. And so that perception is very challenging as a black folk singer to sort of have to overcome, because we have to have these questions instead of just getting to the music. We have to talk about, you know, why don't black people play the banjo and why are folk musicians considered white? So it is a problem because it does get in the way of the history, which is very, very clear in what, you know, African Americans' roles have been.
Yeah, I would never ask you why they don't play the banjo. I mean, the first classical composer to include a banjo in a symphony was William Grant Still, an African American composer. But that, speaking of classical music, which is how you trained, right? You're a classically trained singer from Oberlin. That's another place in which we can talk about the influence that African Americans had, which was outsized even in classical music. And yet, when you talk about legends of classical music, you're almost never talking about William Grant Still. And I wonder if that has an effect on a musician. In other words, as a musician, how much does your role model, how difficult is it to find role models?
I mean, it is difficult, and they don't encourage it. You know, maybe they do now, but when I went to school, you know, the idea of black classical music wasn't really a thing, and just knowing, you know, the giants who, you know, were classical trainers, the Sertor Jones and you know, who's called the Black Patty, and you know, all these people who were there, you kind of get there and you think, oh, I'm just, you know, sort of inhabiting this white world, and that's not true at all, you know, because in the beginning, after emancipation, I mean, that was one of the most sought after things, was classical music, because that was seen as like the pinnacle of Western art music. So, you know, African Americans have been involved in that since, you know, since emancipation. So, or even before, you know, talking about free people of color in the North. So, you know, the thing is that we've been doing this stuff for a long time, and, you know, it colors, pardon the pun, you know, your idea of what your people do if you don't know that. You know, we are told in the narrative, there's this narrative of American music that's sort of told, you know, to everybody. And it's, you know, black people contributed like spirituals and, you know, blues and jazz, and that's it. And it's like, it's way more complicated than that. You know, every American genre has been a combination of, you know, cultural crossroads and cultural influence, but so much of the core of so many American genres does lie within the African American community. And, you know, even those genres that don't have much color today, like country or, you know, old time music, or, you know, even jazz at this point, you know, it's it is an issue, because, you know, it does color, like, as a as a black musician, you know, if you don't know that stuff, you feel like, I mean, when I was going into old time music, I was like, well, this isn't my music, but I'm just gonna like get in here because I really love it. And then I started looking at the history and I was like, oh, what? We invented the banjo? What? You know, like, why wasn't I told this? And you have to seek it out. And then once you seek it out, you find this amazing history, which is actually much more interesting than the history that you're told. I mean, it's much more American. It's much more vibrant. It's much more complicated, you know.
And colorful.
And colorful, exactly. And inspiring in that way.
So then let's get to the music, which, you know, there's things that you're able to do with your voice, which I have to feel you owe to your classical training. There's, you know, even in the breakout performance of Waterboy, the ability to go from to crescendo and decrescendo the way that you do all in one breath, that takes some training.
Waterboy, where are you hiding? If you don't come right here, I'm gonna tear upon you. There ain't no hammer that's on this mountain.
How has the classical training sort of either helped you or has it hindered you at all?
No, I mean, it's been nothing but great. I mean, the only issue I had to deal with was learning how to use a mic. You know, and that was...
Yeah, because opera singers go micless.
Yeah, and, you know, our whole training is to not use the mic. And so I feel bad for my first band. They were very patient to learn how to use the mic.
As you blew out their amps?
Yeah, but, you know, I'm very grateful for my training. You know, and I'm also grateful for the fact that it came later in my life. I didn't start out wanting to be an opera singer, you know, at 10 or 12. That it wasn't until I was in college that I really learned classical music and learned how to sing, you know, in that way. And I'd been, you know, singing with my family before that. So I had this pre-classical idea of how to sing. So, you know, when I started branching off and doing other music, I could combine what I had learned, you know, in the classical world and figuring out how to make that, you know, support rather than to overwhelm. Because, you know, there's not a lot of classical singers who can cross over.
Yeah.
You know, it tends to take
there,
up your
many
entire...
That, there are many that try.
Yeah, there are many that try and they don't succeed. And that is because, you know, to be, you know, a top singer, you have to give everything to that. And I was able to do enough at Oberlin. I did a lot of operas and some more at UNCG. I was able to, you know, really get that experience of being a classical singer and that I can still sing with the symphony. I can still sing in that way. But I wasn't... It didn't overwhelm me or overtake me to the point where I can't disengage. So I use, you know, all of the wonderful things that I learned, the breath control and the mouth positions and all that stuff to support this other kind of singing so that it doesn't overwhelm it. You know what I mean? So that it supports it rather than overtake it.
So this album in some ways is really different from your first solo album. And in some ways they're kind of all of a piece. And by that I mean that the first album you were singing songs made very famous by some really strong voiced and strong willed women. And in this album, you are telling stories of people going even further back in history. Mm-hmm. And what is this, I guess this desire you have or urge to honor those who have gone?
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm a woman of color in 2017, and when I read history, I'm aware of my privilege. You know, I'm aware of the ability that I have to marry whoever I want, to get whatever job that I'm qualified for, to, you know, be able to hold on to my children and not have to think about them being taken away. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really not that far away, number one. And number two, it's, you know, what do you do with privilege? You have to acknowledge it and you have to have a responsibility. That's what I feel anyway. Because we all have privilege in different ways, you know, because there's people out there today who don't have the privilege that I have. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's people who are born in situations that are not as freedom, you know, giving as mine has been. So it's like, it's not only responsibility to other people who aren't as lucky, but it's also responsibility to the people who came before me who sacrificed so much so that I could be where I am. And I feel like if I'm not using my position to tell those stories, then I am not being responsible. I am not, you know, paying my debt, you know, because like I get to wake up in the morning and not be owned by somebody. You know what I mean? I get to not worry about, you know, being accosted or being, you know, being forced or any of that kind of horrible things that, you know, all, like so many of my ancestors had to deal with. And so I just feel like it's my job then to tell those stories. And I'm a musician and I've got this sort of unique background that means I can tell them in a way that maybe they haven't been told before, you know? And I really feel that way pretty strongly. It's like, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm a musician. I mean, I'll sing love songs because I love them and they're great, but like, that's not my mission and that's not the core of what I'm doing right now.
That's singer-songwriter Rhiannon Giddens. She performs Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta. Just ahead, more of my conversation with her. This is On Second Thought.
Come round by my side and I'll sing you a song. I'll sing it so softly it'll do no one wrong. On Birmingham Sunday the blood ran like wine and the choirs kept singing of freedom. That cold autumn morning, no eye saw the sun, and Addie Mae Collins, her number was one. At an old Baptist church, there was no need to run.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. I'm talking with singer and songwriter Rhiannon Giddens. You may know her as the lead voice of the string band The Carolina Chocolate Drops. She's got a new solo album, though. It's called Freedom Highway, and it tells the stories of oppressed African Americans throughout history. In the song Julie, Rhiannon sings about a slave owner who says she loves her slave named Julie, even though the owner has sold Julie's children.
Julie, oh Julie, won't you run? 'Cause I see down yonder the soldiers have come. Julie, oh Julie, can't you see? Them devils have come to take you far from me.
When I was listening to the song Julie, which is just, it just wrecks you. And I wonder if she plays this to her kids. I wonder if they understand what this is about. 'Cause that's difficult. No matter how light-skinned your kids are, going back just a few decades, they would have been subject to Jim Crow laws. Do you talk
Absolutely.
About this stuff?
It's really interesting. You know, they're starting to feel the difference because, you know, their dad's Irish. So,
yeah.
You know, 1,000 years of Irish genes sure beat the crap out of my melanin, you know? So they're pretty pale. And they're starting to feel that difference of, you know, hey, mom's darker than we are. And my daughter in particular, because, you know, she feels an affinity to me because she's a girl. And, you know, I took her to the African American Museum in D.C., which is intense. I mean, it's amazing. And she was just like, you know, I look like you. You know, she's like holding up her arm to mine and going like, I'm closer to you. You know, I'm not white. And I was just like, whoa, like that blew my mind that she's already feeling that division and feeling that, you know, I don't know. It was just, it's just really interesting. It'll be really interesting to see how they deal with it, you know, because they do look white and in the eyys of a lot of people, they would be, but they are, you know, and you know, 50 years ago, they wouldn't
be. They would have been called octoroons or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were so many terms for how much, like, what little drop of black you had in you. I mean, it's just so amazing. There's stories of people who were actually white, who were, you know, mistaken for people who were not white, but, like, had a drop in them and were enslaved. I mean, it's just the history of racism and the color issues are so, it's unbelievable when you look at it and you're just like, I can't believe we have divided, you know, we made so much division based on color when color means nothing, you know, in terms of genetic, you know, difference. And so it's just, you know, that history, it's just, it'll be interesting to see how they process all of that. And then also what I do for a living, you know,
yeah,
with these stories. And they're, I mean, my daughter knows Julie. They know all the songs, you know.
Julie, oh, Julie, won't you lie? If they find that trunk of gold by my side, Julie, oh, Julie, you tell them, men, that that trunk of gold is yours, my friend. Mistress, oh mistress, I won't lie. If they find that trunk of gold by your side, mistress, oh mistress, that trunk of gold is what you got when my children you sold.
You have to perform that on tour over and over again.
Yeah, it was. It's
probably thinking of your own kids, do you not?
Well, that one, you know, I was just talking about this to somebody last night. It is pretty intense because it's not just that one. There's like multiple songs,
yeah,
you know, with dealing with this. And you know, but what I always like to say is that they lived it. I can sing about it. You know, it's the least I can do is to sing about it. They lived through this. I'm not living this. So if I can't sing it, you know what I mean? And it's like figuring out how to, you know, get myself and my soul, you know, centered and grounded so that I can go there night after night and not burn myself out. I mean, that's my trick. That's the trick to figure out. But ultimately, it's like all I'm doing is singing about it and I'm conjuring them up. And that sure as heck beats, you know, living that life that they had to live. So you know what? I'm okay with it.
That's singer-songwriter Rhiannon Giddens. She performs Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta. Thank you.
Thank you.